August 16, 2021, it's WAP for Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Walk for Pedro show. Happy Monday. Start out with John Coltrane, live at Columbia in Latour, Belgium, August 1st, 1965. Tune called Vigil. And then Chris Corsano after that with How Should You Pick Up the Ball and Throw It? I guess there should be a question mark there. Does it sound so declarative?
There was that mess up your file.
Now that you got a Mac. So anyway, people, you can tell that I am not man alone. Brother Matt still at the Love God on the Pleasure Point, because those Estonian software engineers were their Skype invention. I got Brother Chris Corsano. Welcome aboard, Chris.
Thank you.
And where are you speaking to me from?
Ithaca, New York.
Ah! Cornell, Mr. Sagan. Billions.
Indeed.
Billions. You know, I just had a cat on last week from Ithaca.
Travis, yeah, I know.
Right. He's a teacher at the school, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's a small world up here. My wife teaches at there too, and yeah.
And also, so, I've been playing some stuff from a band there called the Plaster Man. So people kind of upstate or western New York, I don't know what the fuck you call it, but it gets big time winter. All that, and big time sweaty summer too. You get best of both worlds. I lived because my pop was getting trained for nuclear engine room in Schenectady. Well, it was actually Boston Spa near Schenectady. The GE had a nuclear plant, so a little bit I spent there between stints in Virginia before I came to Pedro. But enough about Watt. Let's get into fucking Brother Chris and his journey through music. Please, Chris, bring your earliest musical recollection.
The family, you know, record player. I think my sister gave it to me. Devo's Freedom of Choice. That's
Older
playing
sister?
That and just staring at the cover and the inner sleeve that had the you could send away for like a Devo suit or a hat, or, you know, is all pretty fascinating to, I guess I was in kindergarten or something.
Older sister?
Yeah. Yeah. Half sister. I got a half sister and a half brother who are like figure pretty heavily in me turning out the way I did.
Chris, the reason I bring that up, because, you know, I've been doing 5 shows a week since November. So a lot of people, and especially with this, experimental stuff, it seems a lot of them are younger siblings. Yeah, it's a trip.
Wow.
Maybe it's just a statistical anomaly, but whatever the fuck. Anyway, so it was a Devo record is your earliest memory. Now, in this pad, where was this pad?
New Jersey. Okay. Northern Jersey.
Yeah, like tiny California, it's flipped the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at the license plates, I was Garden State, yeah. Kind of like Golden State, both G's. But then you got jug handles when you make the fucking port turns. Yeah, a little different. You go starboard first, people. It's trippy how they work. Actually, it's a very fucking rural state. People, because of the Newark thing right across from the river, and so they think all New Jersey's like. Was there musical instruments in that pad you grew up in?
My brother is a drummer, and he's the oldest. So, yeah, his kit was around at times. If he might be grabbing, you know, his old kit and whatever. But yeah, I definitely remember tapping on his kit and being into it and not knowing how it worked at all.
I'm sensing a connection.
Yeah.
Now, can you remember the first record you bought with your own money? Not a gift from your sister, no Devo merchandise.
Yeah, right? Well, it was, this is to the younger listeners of your show, it's going to be maybe worth explaining that, like, they used to have these ads in the back of, like, the magazine that came with the Sunday paper, right? And it'd be like, buy 12 cassettes for a penny, you know, and then they'd be selling their Lost Leaders, you know, major record labels or whatever,
Columbia
and then they'd
Music
hook you
Club,
into something.
Columbia Record Club, something like that. I did the same thing with 8-tracks.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, my time was the cassette time in the early 80s, and I think the first record tapes I bought was probably like 12 at once, and I'm pretty sure Hendrix Smash Hits was in that bunch.
Great. Yeah.
Right, that was probably the coolest.
If you didn't send them back, you had to buy it, right?
That maybe I may have done the one that was like, you actually had to pay a dollar and you could keep them, and you could like avoid their credit destroying Ponzi scheme that they were doing. But, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, what about first gig you saw?
That was this kid that I went to school with took some of his friends to see David Lee Roth, probably like Meadowlands, some giant insane spot to be my first gig. But I guess a lot of people might have that experience that like the first show is some arena.
Might have been and Billy was, Sheehan on bass from Buffalo.
Sorry, say that again?
Billy Sheehan on bass from Buffalo.
Oh, all right.
Maybe, if I remember the first, and Steve Vai might have been his guitar man. I remember the first tour he did by himself. Okay, let me ask you about school. Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
No. I got a drum set of my own in eighth grade, and I started playing with kids from school, you know, but more in high school, but nothing through school proper.
Now you're talking the garage band, basement band, bedroom band.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that kit. Now you've heard trap set, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know what that word means, right?
Yep.
Contraption.
Exactly.
Okay, you know. Everybody I ask don't know. So thank you, Mr. Chris Corsano. But was it totally your brother, or did you get your what other inclination? Let me say, you said you jumped on his kit, but did you ever get on the Pots and Pans like Elvin Jones?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, different drummer, right? That half-hour documentary. He talks about that. His sister helped him with and his paper route to get a set. How did you get your set?
I think my brother had grabbed his old set, and so it wasn't in the house anymore. And then I probably begged and pleaded with my folks. And Tony, I mean, my older brother, he's a great drummer. He actually was in the 90s era James Chance and the Contortions.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know.
I saw I saw the early 80s version.
Oh, wow.
They played the other mask. And, the singer liked to fight with the crowd.
Yeah. In the 90s. James Chance more on stage, so I would check out shows, and I never got in a fight with anybody, which is good.
Yeah, it was
for me.
Yeah, I mean, it was. Pat Place was on the show a few months ago, I think doing guitar for him and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, slide and stuff. Okay, so your brother. Okay, into this. So he was your gateway drug.
Absolutely, yeah. I think looked up to my siblings just in general. I thought they were awesome, so what they did I wanted to do, and the drums was definitely me following in his footsteps.
Now with your buddies from school, what was the material? Like me and D Boom, for example, we try to copy songs, you know, Blue Oyster Cult, Creedence off records.
Mm-hmm.
Were you guys doing that, or were you trying to write your own stuff?
We were copying you, actually. my first band, the thing that united us was Minutemen Firehose.
Georgie. George Hurley.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I got to play with him 14 years. Beautiful, man. And I'm about to do a fifth Unknown Instructors record with him. Joe Baiza, Jay Maskus on the guitar, Dan McGuire from Toledo on the poems. Yeah. So, okay. That's very kind of you to say.
Oh, man. I learned how to play drums along with Mitch Mitchell, copping George's everything, to get the triplets.
There's an interview where Jimi Hendrix goes, Mitch Mitchell's my Elvin Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you totally hear it now I do, because from listening to Elvin a lot, if I go back, because I heard Mitch Mitchell first, and now everything I hear Mitch do, it's like, well, that's that lick from Elvin, who might be doing a Max Roach thing, but making it an Elvin thing. You know, you kind of see it go like time machine all the way back.
Well, I think for them England guys, we got to give a lot of credit to Ginger Baker. Because the England guys were really learning the blues. But I think Ginger said, you know, rock and roll blues, but it's kind of a mule. So bring in some jazz, too. And I think Cream had a big... I know whenever you say trio, people say Rush, but Cream was... I know Jimmy put together his band before Rush, I think, maybe a little before. And it was after seeing Cream, right?
Yeah, but Mitch, you know, Mitchell was doing, like, jazz, like, kind of session work, I think, if I read correctly. Like, so him being aware of Elvin's every move makes sense to me, you know, historically.
Well, 67, we lose John Coltrane, you know, and that's around the time when Cream, God, they're only around a year or two, right? That band really wasn't that short, but I think Ginger, I mean, yeah, he had some personality problems, but he did bring in a lot of jazzy stuff. And then for sure, Mitch Mitchell went, and, you know, whenever he played, like, stand next to your, I'm going to show you everything I know up to this point, right? Mm-hmm. Beautiful, beautiful that way. You sent me this thing called The Rat from Vampire Camp.
Yeah.
I want to play it.
everything, the brightest light. And what to take from this tangle of wires, tourniquets and knots, the ties that bind us all, a straight line, the one end of time, and in that flash was everything.
Watt for Pedro Show. Start that chunk of music off with Vampire Kant, the Rat. Kant like a canner, like a song. Can you tell?
Like, you'd have to ask, that's another of my formatting problems, like, with, that's like cannot, with the apostrophe, but
it's
which I didn't want to.
It's a contraction, it's a contraction.
Yeah.
Okay. Watson Lerner, forever. Okay. Then we have Bronze Age UFO from Baltimore with their Part B2, Lagoon Monster Rubber Mask Volume 2. Ray Shin after that brand new You Ruined My Breakfast. Sam Lockward featuring Grace Lockward, his wife. Iowa City, a sound beaten. Bob Buckle Jr. from nearby Dubuque. My Arteries, Who I Am. Thomas Prendon from the D.C. area, The Charm of Imperfection. Wharton Tears, great drummer man, and had a beautiful studio, Fun City in Manhattan. Great Awakening. Chris Cones, his proj, How I Quit Crack, I think it's with his wife. Eugenicide, like the town, the college town in Oregon. I think Zudhorn Rolo lives there. Virginia Genta and Chris Corzano with an excerpt from an unreleased track. In fact, as far as Watt's concerned, a name track. A known track. Okay, what about instruction? Are you total autodidact with the drum?
Well, my brother gave me some exercises, you know, wrote these things down, that I think he got off of taking a lesson with Barry Altschul, who played with, like, Sam Rivers and all sorts of people.
Got to see Raymond Pettibone. Took me to see Sam Rivers in Hollywood.
Ooh.
Yeah, years ago. Wow. It was beautiful. It was a club on Cahuenga called Catalina. We saw buttloads of people there. But, okay, so we got a lesson from him. So, and in a way, that
and
kind of biosynthesis transferred on to you.
But I was terrible at practicing, so I kind of, you know, and then I had lessons for like 3 months with somebody, just, you know, like a local guy, but I didn't have my thing together. Things didn't sort of gel until later on for me, for actually like being obsessed with it, putting in all the time that, you know, like it just was the thing that I had to be doing. So
the learning was by doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you
like
joined a lot of bands, right?
Yeah, just try to play with people as much. And then, you know, learning by kind of watching them. Like in high school, the people I was playing with, one of them especially was kind of like, he could just pick anything up. Guitar, drums, bass, and like skating too. Like whatever we did, he just kind of was amazing at it. I think he's like a nuclear physicist now, so there you go. Like, and I was always felt like I was, you know, eating his dust and just trying to hang on. But playing with somebody who's like that, you learn a lot.
Yeah. What's the other way, Chris? You get a bunch of fucking cats who can't play, so you look good, and then nobody learns anything. Right? I mean, that's such an ego stroke. I think you went by going the further mile and maybe eating a little dust or playing a little Caboose Rock. Fuck, it was a smart move, brother.
Yeah, I am always the Caboose, I feel like. I don't. That's all right. Somebody's got to be there.
Ah, come on. Biggest mistake Minutemen did was putting Georgie in the back, man. He should have been. The last 20 years, I've always had my drummers at the front of the stage. Because, come on, especially with rhythm music, why be in denial?
Yeah.
So,
well, I caught you guys, Firehose, that is, it. I guess it was Irving Plaza on the 48 State Kootenai tour.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
I could see him just fine. You know, I was watching every move, every hair flip that he was doing.
The unit. We call that the unit. You get it twirling, right? Like a helicopter play. Yeah,
totally.
Instead of Caboose Rock, did you ever think about starting your own bands way back then?
You mean like myself, that I was...
The drummer as a band leader, the drummer as a composer, why not?
Yeah, I mean, it was always, to me, I never felt like I was in, well, you know, geographically in the back, but it always felt like collective style, you know, like I would maybe write some sort of guitar part or a drum thing or whatever, you know, you just kind of always mixing it up. So it never felt like that hierarchy maybe is other people think about, but I didn't feel it.
No, I think that's one of the big successes of the movement was trying to destroy that hierarchy shit. See, people don't realize when everybody's starting, you're all on a you know what I mean? Like a lot of the people in the movement, you're on a level playing field. So you don't have to, you know, fall into that hierarchy so easy unless you fucking want to, you know, so you can lord over people or be lorded over. But, so, even from the early moments, you were into the collective kind of, let's dream by committee trip.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And, you think a lot of your learning came from doing? Did you get into this like I'm going to study records, right? Like, for example, George Hurley. He taught himself drums with two records. My Generation. No. What's it called? Not My Generation. The one before. Can't Explain, you know. It's got Quick One and shit. The Who first record. And then he got Billy Cobham, the Spectrum. And those two records with headphones, that's how he taught himself drums.
It's kind of, and he took both of those things and kind of made a Frankenstein, beautiful Frankenstein monster out of them. I hear it. Yeah.
Now, what about you?
Started on records and then to jump ahead to the more like figuring out improvising type stuff. That was, I was working door for somebody who was doing shows in Western Mass when I was living there. And just sort of Byron Coley actually hooked me up with this guy, Michael Ayler.
He was on the show Saturday.
I just started listening to it before we, this call. So yeah, I can't wait to check out Byron's, that's going to be amazing, I'm sure.
Yeah, he's a great spiel. Great cat. Great. I love that man. Okay, so you actually, being a doorman, you were learning shit. That's great.
Yeah, and then I worked for Byron, like, because of where I was going at school. Like, I went up to Massachusetts for college, and I had interned at a record label for just one summer in Jersey, and it just happened to be this guy, Glenn Morrow, who knew Byron from the 70s. He asked me, where are you going to school? This, you know, because I was leaving, and he's like, oh, I'm going to Massachusetts. He's like, I've got the best hookup for you ever. And then learning at Byron's feet, Byron just playing, like, oh, you like Ornette Coleman? Check out Archie Shepp, you know. And then, so Byron was, like, hipping me to all these records, which
Billy,
I don't know
Billy
if I...
Billy Higgins. Tom Pettibone brought me to a gig where Billy was playing. And, man, it was like my gig. I mean, I was, like, one table away, and he stared at me the whole fucking gig. There was no like that shit.
I want to turn the tables and ask you about playing with Charlie Hayden. Like, what is that like as a bassist to be up there with Charlie Hayden?
Oh, you mean with the Minutemen? Yeah, he came in, little man with a bow. Well, I tell you, he had a 200-year-old French bass with no amp, so we had to get tiny.
I've seen the video, you know, on YouTube, and it's great.
We had to get really tiny. But, man, the man was such an inspiring cat. Love him, man. Love him. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, August 16, 2021, edition of Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Chris Corsano. Hold tight for hour two. August 16, 2021, it's the second hour of Watt Pedro Show. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Wife for Pedro show. Start out the second hour with Cinematic Coupling of Acorn. Live excerpt, Kira Sakata with Chris Corsano. I got to do a gig with him and Mr. O'Rourke in Tokyo. And very interesting man. He also, Mr. Sakata makes documentaries and stuff. Incredible.
Yeah, microbiologist. He's
right.
He's amazing in, you know, in so many different ways. Yeah, he's got a lot going on.
Right. And was this over there, this recording?
It was,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we had Leaf Blower, which is Raquel from Galaxy's side prod, Solstice Flight. Louis Fang, she's the pipa. It's kind of a China guitar or lute. Yi Dance, King Woman with Burn. And finally, Chris Corsano with Bill Orcutt. Distance of Sleep. What's that about?
You'd have to ask Bill. He came up with the titles. So.
Okay. Well, how'd the proj come about or whatever? You weren't a total hostage, right?
Yeah. We've been playing together for a while, and then that one it was in COVID time, so that one was kind of, I recorded the drum part, sent it to him, and he did his thing over it, trying to make it sound like it wasn't done that way. But
pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Right, because at the end of the day, it's stuff coming out of speakers, so, you know. But, right. But I'm glad you, because we can use the internet besides spreading bullshit and lies. We can actually trade music and make tunes. That's interesting. So, but to back it up a little bit and stuff, improvised music, is that via your brother too, or is it, because we got to let the people know. I mean, when I had Byron on the show a couple days ago, it was more about, I write record reviews. But actually, he's also a record collector, right? I mean, billions of records.
Yeah. So billions and billions.
Right, like Mr. Sagan, right? But that helped expand your universe, audio universe, right?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be here talking to you if it weren't for Byron. And, yeah, I worked for him a bunch of years, and Lili too, his partner, so I was like living in the area, and I was at their house all the time, and Byron was always hipping me to stuff, and Lili in her office had things, and a lot of Lightning Hopkins I listened to, and yeah, just all different kinds
Lightning
of stuff.
Hopkins.
And Byron,
Lightning Hopkins.
Yeah,
Lili's a big Lightning Hopkins fan.
Blues on, Houston, blues on the acoustic guitar. A lot of light, ZZ Top comes out of Lightning Hopkins. Frank Beard. I got to meet him. Nice man.
Nice.
Yeah. And for those days, man, little four-piece drum set, you didn't see those in arena rock much.
Right.
Maybe Charlie Watts. That was it.
Right. Minimalist.
Yeah. But it don't matter, right, if you're the heartbeat. Thank you, Earl Palmer. Thank you, Earl Palmer. So being exposed to all this stuff really helped shape your consciousness regarding what you're going to do with the sticks in your hand, the beat man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And who do you think? You think Mitch Mitchell was most profound?
In the beginning, I think now it's like you can look back through time or – you know, seeing everything that I heard in Mitch, also in Drumbo, Captain Beefheart was big for
John
me.
Fred.
And then George Hurley. Then
what about the other cat, Art Tripp?
Oh, from Magic Band?
Yeah.
I mean, I think Trout Mask was the thing that got burned, you know, so heavily on my brain from multiple listens. But yeah, actually all of Beefheart stuff, just a way of, and it, you know, like the more I think about it, it's not just the drummer, it's how the drummer and the bassist interact and how it fits everybody together. Like it is the collective thing. So it's more the relation between elements than just, you know, this person's real tech or whatever. Like I think that's kind of the thing that comes through all of it, you know.
You know what? I think that's really fundamental and really important. That's great, great. Because I think people get hung up on the stuff that ain't really core. What you're talking about is what makes that music timeless, I think.
Yeah, and anything that we're, you know, it could be Motown, or it could be like Charlie Hayden and Billy Higgins, or Ed Blackwell, like the way that...
Motown, the James Jamerson, you know? Benny Benjamin.
Absolutely,
right? They got a hole in the cardboard. Oh, fuck, that's so bitching. And when I came up with that idea for that project with Pettibone, Sock Tight, that's what I was thinking of Jackie, too. Like that, the Can Cat, who invented kind of a German funk, right? In a trip. Look, you gave me this music here, salvaged. Mr. Rasmussen, Flaherty, Corsano.
Yep.
Yeah, let's listen.
Thank you. 忘れられない風景。
Watch for Pedro show. That chunk of music started off with Salvage, Rasmussen, Flaherty, Corsano. If Biwana, this is Margolis out of Chester, New York, screwed it up again from his Radio Slaves. Everybody had little short songs. The Monkey Town Milk Spillers with Can You Blame That Girl? Pet Bottle Ninjin with Peacock Spider. Takao Ito with Shizukana Ongaku Ninata. And then finally, Flower Corsano Duo. An excerpt from The River That Turned Into a Raging Fire. That makes me think of Cayuga. The one that goes through Cleveland, right? It actually in the 70s caught fire.
Oh, yeah.
So fucking polluted, right? Crime.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's a Temptations lyric, you know, the
oh yeah, song. yeah, absolute.
But you know, they were maybe saw into the future and caught that, you know.
yeah. But tell me about the Salvage, the one we stuck that block off with.
That's Meta Rasmussen.
Wow, you got all little there.
Oh, sorry, I'm back.
No. Something happened with your voice, and it's all tiny ass now.
I think I moved away from my
get closer.
My phone.
Not now, though.
Yeah, here I am. I'm back.
Okay.
So Mette Rasmussen, alto player from Denmark, lives in Norway, and Paul Flaherty from Connecticut, who I've played with since '99 or something, and Mette maybe since like 2012. So that was the first time that I got the two of them together, and they're like two horn players that have meant a lot to me, or, you know, I love playing with both of them. So that was cool to get to have like that first meeting style thing. And I love the way both of them play.
You can only do that once, right? You can only have your first time once. So that's really kind of critical.
Yeah. But the cool thing about the way that, you know, when this music works, I think, is that it doesn't have to be an awkward first. You don't have to do chit chat or, you know, any polite conversation. Like, they just got down to it. They didn't step on each other's toes. They just kind of worked so awesome together. And it's like, of course, yeah, that's why you play the music like that, is that it leaves a lot of stuff open so you can just get together and relate and, you know, cut through any kind of bullshit or any ego stuff. And then you just have hopefully good music.
Yeah, you make an interesting conversation out of the ensemble, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now, look at that role you played, because you kind of like construct, where you set it up, right? You kind of created a situation.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, anytime where you're like, oh, you know, you really got to meet my friend, this, you know, like, just like in being an actual human, you know, you're trying to connect all the people who haven't met yet, that you think they could do good stuff together, that, you know, this outlook will help that outlook or whatever it is. So, yeah, to facilitate that is cool. I do enjoy that. I don't want to be the whole band leader thing isn't maybe for me, but just the idea of getting people to play together for the first time is kind of fun.
Well, that's why I said situation creator instead of band leader.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And then also, I like the idea of you getting into like the musical persona. It's not the name game, because there's all that jive hype, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's beautiful. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, August 16, 2021 edition of Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Chris Corsano. Hold tight for hour three. August 16, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show. We'll be right back. Watt for Pedro show. Start off the third hour. Amato, McPhee, Kessler, Corsano. Kessler. I'm thinking of some really lame bourbon. Yeah, plastic bottles, right? So they don't break when you drop them in the shower. Is this John McPhee? I got to meet this
Joe
man. Joe McPhee, that's it. Right, right. Probably the oldest guy in this group right here, right? I got to meet him once. He's a beautiful man. He was so kind to me. And this is an excerpt called This Is Our Language. Then we had digital images with Subbus. And finally, the Chris Corsano Band with unreleased track. Kind of popular name for it, too. But I didn't know there was a Chris Corsano Band. Tell me about this.
Well, the only way that I would call it that is because I'm the only motherfucker in the band. So it's me playing all the, you know, the bass and the guitar and the drums.
Awesome. And like, you mean like Dave Grohl, Stevie Wonder, Prince thing?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And you know those guys all started their recordings with drums.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's how these mostly go. Yeah, well, not... I flipped it around in some ways, but yeah, it's kind of, drums is like the foundation is a good way to work when there's pulse, you know, involved. And then when on the kind of more out, free, whatever you want to call it, I think I started the other way. So the drums kind of filled in the spaces rather than created the, you know, the framework. But yeah, drums is the root that works.
When you say pulse, are you Milford Gray's?
Well, just like, yeah, I guess there's a whole lot of ways to define a pulse. I was thinking more like...
Tony Adams?
I mean, Milford is, you know, huge to anybody, but like to me it was like, yeah, that was a... Seeing him live, I think, was another break of my brain so the you know, could reform and be better or whatever. Yeah, he's the best, you know, yeah.
Yeah, this...
But that was...
But like Elvin, right? He had a problem because he was playing like the ocean. He wasn't so, you know, people wanted metronome, right? And he's playing more like the ocean where there's like, you know, swells and shit.
Mm-hmm.
John Coltrane wanted that, right?
Milford's, you know, at least in interviews I've checked out, like he does talk about working with people that didn't want what he was doing, you know, which is... Seems bizarre to me because I've never heard a note I didn't love out of Milford. But yeah, I guess everybody's got their path they want. And, you know, the nice thing about having a band where you're the only person is no one's going to tell me how to drum or how to guitar or how to bass or whatever. But yeah.
Now, in your pad, do you have a recording sitch?
Yeah, in the basement, kind of like just a homemade thing, some mics and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, but that's all right. Was this done there? This Is Our Language?
This Is Our Language, the one with Rodrigo.
No, unreleased track. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I haven't gotten the names because it's not out yet. It's maybe doesn't have a home. We'll see. But, yeah, it's that was done in the basement.
Yeah, well, I bring that up because it sounds good to me, man.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
Yeah, very good. Very fucking good. And maybe it's the same thing like you learn drums, learning by doing.
Yeah. I think, you know, there was with bass, I bought a bass way back in high school off that guy, Pete Sharma, the polymath who's now the physicist. His little brother had a bass that he was selling. And so I bought it off of him, a Phoenix, I don't know. And then I just try to learn Minutemen songs. So, you know.
Let me run this by you. People say, bass, it's a guitar with four strings. What about this idea? Hey, bass, it's a drum with four strings.
Absolutely.
Better than the idea of the guitar with four strings, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, Cecil Taylor, right, wasn't that the thing of like 88 tune drums, you know, like the piano? You could lift it. Anything is a percussion instrument.
I think in the swing band days, everybody was in the rhythm section except the fucking horns.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say, like, I've even had that thought. Like, the bassist, Matt Hayner, amazing, amazing bassist, played in this group Test, was in No Neck, but he plays kind of like a drummer a lot of times. even if he's playing, you know, like a walking line, something about it to me just feels like drummers, and it makes it really fun to relate to. And yeah, a lot of the people I play with somehow have, I'm hearing them as drummers. So yeah, bass is drums with four strings. I'll buy it.
Okay. I mean, the appearance is deceiving, let's put it that way. But for sure, the fucking note is in the kick drum and maybe some toms, but it sure ain't in the cymbals and the snare. Okay, open an umbrella indoors. I'm going to play that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watch for Peter, our show, last music for this edition. This is Christine Abdonor, Chris Cusano doing Opening Umbrellas Indoors. Dangerous people. Peligro. Then we had part one of three, this project called Tricephalus. I think it's the Hack Picado people in Berlin. With 191230, it's probably a date, huh? The Day Before the Last Day. And there's two more parts that I'll play the next two episodes. Then finally, last music, last tune, Open Hearth from Bukowski, Lopez, Corsano. Enlighten us, Chris, to this.
That's Steve Bukowski, who's up in Buffalo. Plays a bunch of different horns, but Barry tenor sax. And then it's Brandon Lopez, who another Jersey guy originally, but he lives in Brooklyn now. And so that was just a group that they play together a whole lot. With Gerald Cleaver, awesome drummer. So that's a more regular trio, but we got together a few years back and did that.
And before that, with Christine?
That was in a recording studio in Berlin. I've been a huge fan of hers for a long time, since seeing her live in 2008. And no one plays like her. She does all these things to the sax to make it sound like insects or robots or whatever, you know. And she's, you know, autodidact, came up with this all from left field, and it's just a whole sound world. So that was, me trying to, you know, caboose again, I guess, you know, like just eat dust and seeing if I could hang, in her sound world. And I didn't record it, but I mixed it. So I'm not good at that, but the thing that you get from that is you hear things over and over, and you can kind of put it in slow motion and really see how people work, you know, or hear how people work. And, to hear, not only does she just make really cool sounds with like the basic thing that I like, but then also the way that she anticipates a response to other people is like, there's like an intelligence and a, I don't know, sensitivity or something that seems superhuman to me. That's like, well, like that thing of you play with people who are kicking your ass, and hopefully you can, any catching up will make you a better person, I'm hoping. So that was like a really, special record for me, I guess, cause I just got my ass handed to me, and you know, that was good. I enjoyed it.
Praying for collateral damage. Now look, where can people find you on the internet?
A pretty, as of now, defunct website, but it's still there. It's core-sano.com, so core-sano.com, and you know, once touring starts, it'll be more readily updated. But yeah, that's where I'm at.
Well, where you're at right now is busy with making this record, right?
Yeah, that too.
Chris Corsano Band.
Yeah.
Right, Army of One. But but you know, you get to be the shot caller. I mean, literally. I can't wait to hear it. I can't wait to hear it. If this is like a glimpse of what it's going to be, I can't wait to hear it, Chris.
Oh, wow, thanks. Man, if you told 17-year-old me that went and saw that Firehose show that I'd be talking to you now, you actually gave me a shirt. We were walking around the back of Irving Plaza, and you were hanging out at the van long after, like an hour after the show was like totally over. And like my friends, like Phil and Pete from the band, you know, they walked by, they didn't clock you, but I saw you and I was like, well, I can't, you know, and we stopped and we talked to you, and you were so nice. You gave me a shirt, which, you know, I've cherished ever since. So, that makes me very happy that you're even mildly tolerant of my
more than that. When you get done, I would like you to come back on the show and let's play it and talk about it.
All right.
Okay.
Deal.
Okay. Big love, brother Chris. People, it's been the August 16, 2021 edition of WAP Peter Show. Keep your powder dry.